Blog Talk Radio.
Hello again, everyone out there. It is Wednesday, April 4th, 2012, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, and you're listening to Ringside Wrap. I am Mike Sempervivi. I'm going to be joined here in a minute by Les Thatcher, who is on the line right now. And obviously, you just heard at the top of the show there, if you were in a cave or under a rock or something like that, not only did WrestleMania take place this weekend, but Brock Lesnar returned to WWE on Raw on Monday night. And obviously, we're going to be getting heavily into that this evening with some guests that may be joining us a little bit later on the line. But I actually wanted to start out the show tonight, and we wanted to start out the show tonight talking about Chief J. Strongbow, who, for those of you who are unaware, passed away on Tuesday at the age of 83. Now, he is a guy that obviously he said his name, Chief J. Strongbow, but for many of the people listening to this program, and to maybe less you yourself, you know him better as Joe Scarpa, a former amateur wrestler who made his bones and did it quite well in Florida and Georgia. And Les, how are you doing this evening?
You finally got around to me. Okay, Mike.
The producer gave me a battle plan.
you were following directions?
Yes, sir.
I'm not very good at that. I'm old enough to drive without help. And we'll continue to till I take my last breath. In fact, probably get worse as I get older. The last time I worked with Strongbow was when Flair, Crockett, and Mulligan owned the Knoxville territory, and he worked in there with us for a period of time. But, I can't say I knew him well, but, I what time I was around him, he always a pleasant man. You know, I always got along with him. He did good business as Joe Scarpa, the babyface in the South, and then the deal is Jay Strongbow with WWF and then, a little bit with WWF. And, one of the things, and I read a couple guys mention on Facebook how when he was sort of the, I don't know what you actually have a title, but when it was still WWF, he was kind of the payoff man for the guys who did enhancement work and so forth. And a couple guys had written on Facebook that he took care of them. And I know that when I supplied them with guys, that he was always saw to it that the guys, kind of took them by the hand verbally, so to speak, and took care of them, made sure they got their money, and, you know, that they knew where they were going. So, you know, all I can say is, you know, he's helpful to the young kids. You know, drew some money himself, and you know, and was able to retire and kick back. I think Joe is quite a golfer. That's a game that I don't like and don't play. So,
well,
I'm not that.
You know, gentleman that knows him a little bit better is actually joined us on the line right now, and like to welcome him in, the assassin Jody Hamilton. And Mr. Hamilton, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How about yourself?
Very well.
How you doing,
sir?
How you doing, Jody?
Less hard, buddy.
I'm good, bud.
Well, obviously, under the circumstances, a sad time to bring you on to talk about Joe Scarpa, but. I'm a little bit younger. I'm only 36, so I remember Strongbow in his WWF days, but through the Georgia Wrestling History site and listening to guys like you, I got to actually learn a little bit about Joe Scarpa. And Jody, can you talk a little bit about his career in Georgia and in Florida? Because obviously there's not a whole lot of footage of it or things like that. There's only the stories, but how big of a star and how great was he?
Well, I met Joe first in New York when he was just starting in the business. He'd been in the business several years, I guess, but he, like most of the guys at that particular time around New York and so on, they were just working sporadically. And this was, my God, this was back in 1957, so you know how long I've known Joe Scarpa. So, He was a hell of a performer in the ring. He really was. And when he was after he left New York, he went to Florida, and of course he made a pass through Georgia, and he worked a lot of the territories before he finally went back and kind of basically based out of New York, Washington, whatever the office was at the time. But He was a man's man, and there was very few guys that I have met in the business that I would trust implicitly, and he was one of them. And I can't say anything bad about him. The only thing I could say would be good things, because I don't know anything bad about him, to tell you the God's truth. And he was always nice to me. We wrestled against each other on numerous occasions. He used to tease me because we had a boxing match one time in Jacksonville, and he always used to rib me, but he was spitting leather out for 3 months after that boxing match, because he didn't know anything about boxing and everything. And of course I had somewhat of a Golden Gloves background and had a few professional fights and so on when I was a kid. And so I knew a little more about how to handle myself with the gloves on than he did. And I basically just kept my left hand in his face most of the night. And he used to tease about that. But as far as a all-around performer and stuff was concerned, before he became Chief J. Strongbow, he was a damn good, solid performer. And then, of course, he became Chief J. Strongbow and did the Indian gimmick and so on. And that's really where, through the push that he got off of New York and the TV they had in New York at the time, that's really how he became really well known in the wrestling circles as Chief J. Strongbow.
Now, how was it? Because seeing clips online, I know of him, the stuff with Ernie Ladd, and he was so well known in Georgia. When he came back after being Chief J. Strongbow, at a time where, you know, I mean, how was it with people recognizing him, or did he just? Was he able to play the gimmick so well and live it so well that he was able to convince people that, no, that guy, I'm not Joe Scarpa, I may look like him, but no, that wasn't me?
No, I don't think the fans ever really considered that. fans, I think fans were aware of the fact that the guys changed their name and their gimmick from time to time, and so on. And they, I don't think any fan doubted the fact or did not try to deny the fact that Joe Scarpa wasn't Chief J. Strongbow, or Chief J. Strongbow wasn't Joe Scarpa. They just said, well, he used to be Joe Scarpa, now he's Chief J. Strongbow, and they accepted it that way.
Wes?
No, I was thinking, too, the time frame probably, Joe, that when he worked at Scarpa up there at New York in the 50s, the time he went back, that probably the fan base had changed quite a bit anyway, right? So there probably wasn't a lot of people
I wasn't referring to New York nearly as much as I was when he came back around here in Georgia and Florida and those places where he had actually been a bigger star as Joe Scarpa here than he ever was as Joe Scarpa up there. The Joe Scarpa was around New York area. Joe Scarpa was a middle of the card guy at best, you know, and he never got his push until he went back as Chief J. Strongbow.
He was top babyface in Georgia for a while. Were you here, or were you there when he was on top there, Joe?
Part of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he drew some money. You know, he was a good card. He was a good card in Florida too. And he was great to work with in the ring and everything. It was very smooth. And like I say, I had known him for so long and everything, and we were actually close friends. And of course, you know, we end up living in the same hometown together.
Now, when it came to the matches, because I know Don Curtis obviously is most known for the team with Lewin, but he and Joe Scarpa teamed up against the Assassins numerous times, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
As far as those matches at the time, too, and again, to somebody who doesn't know, how big were those matches? Because obviously, you know, with the four guys who were in that ring, they had to be spectacular, and obviously the minds that all four of you had too. I mean, how much did you take from those matches and were able to put in the things that you did later on?
How much were we able to do what?
How much were you able to, you know, as far as all four of you being such great workers and having such great minds for the business, as far as those matches that you had, did they continue on throughout your career, or did you go back to those great matches for something that you used later?
No, not really. I always try to be innovative and not repeat anything that I had done in the past and so on with whomever, you know, and so on. And the matches that the tag matches we had and the single matches that we had and everything, when they were over, they were over. And the next match that I had, wherever it was, either as singles or with those guys as a team, that was a brand new match and a brand new thought and everything was put into it.
Mike, I think what you don't understand, well, a lot of younger people don't understand, but you tried not to, you know, I know today you find a formula and they repeat it like every 15 minutes, but like Joe's saying, it was, you know, every night was a different night, a different situation, different town. You worked the crowd a different way, and, you know, you're maybe working a different angle or whatever. So it wasn't like there was a standard pattern to work with anybody.
Back in our days, very, very, very few guys. The only guys that became routine, what we call routine workers, which simply means they did the same damn stuff every night and everything, ended up being guys like Buddy Rogers and a few of the guys that he was associated with. But basically, most of your top guys and everything were anything but routine workers. In fact, like Les said, you know, you're in back in those days, you were in back in the same towns week after week after week, you know. So you had to change things up. And that was one of the reasons why guys didn't have the longevity in certain areas like they do now. You know, a guy can go to WWE and he can stay up there for 10 years and probably never work the same town more than two or three times in the 10-year period because they're the only ones running, and they just run periodically here and there. But when back in the days when we had territories, you had, for instance, here in Georgia, you had two towns on a Monday, you had two towns on a Tuesday, Wednesday you had one town, Thursday you had two spot shows, Friday you had Atlanta, then Saturday you had your TV in Columbus, and then you had Griffin and Carrollton that night. So, you know, you could, if you were running a program of sorts in Augusta on a Monday night, then you were going to be back there 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row. So consequently, you got to have for longevity of your own career, you had to have different matches every week.
Being on the road and working that schedule, obviously his time in New York, when he went back up, he became a close confidant, I believe, of Vince McMahon Sr. and obviously continued on to work for Vince Jr. for years and years. His mind for the business, can you give us a little glimpse into it? And did he have a book anywhere, or did he just work, to your knowledge, as you know, on the road and payoffs and things like that?
I don't think he was ever interested in trying to be a booker. I think his forte was just handling the business end for whomever he was having to be working for at the time, which mostly most of his office duties and stuff was with the old WWF, and was with Vince Sr. and Vince Jr. And it was like handling the gate receipts and doing payoffs and stuff like that. That was when they did them every night.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier too, Joe, before you came on. I don't even know what the title was, but when I was like, when I'd supply an enhancement talent here, he took care of paying the kids and making sure they were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell the title was, or even if it did have a title, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure it had a title. It was just okay, here's what you're going to do, da-da-da-da-da, and everything, so he'll go out and do it, and he did. And he did a great job as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Yeah, he was like Joe said earlier. He was straightforward. He was all about business, if you wanted to know where he stood, all you just had to do was ask him, and he'd tell you.
So he wasn't bashful about telling you where he stood.
No.
Were you able to stay in close contact with him over the years, or you know, obviously, you know, living close together, you know, close together for a time there? I mean, were you able to stay up with him a little bit?
Yeah, we used to visit quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And in fact, there was a gun shop here in Griffin that he and I used to go to all the time, and not together, but we'd meet there. And the owner of the gun shop and everything was a great wrestling fan, and we used to sit and shoot the bull for hours on end, you know. And it was a favorite hangout for a lot of the deputy sheriffs here and some of the city policemen also, and so on, and that'll give us the opportunity to meet those guys too, and which always helps. living in a little town, it was not that small now. It's grown tremendously in the past 15, 20 years, but living as close together as we did and everything, we were able to keep in pretty close contact. Now, we have, I'm sorry to say, kind of not lost contact, but we just didn't contact or have that much social interaction in the past couple of years. I think that was due to Joe not feeling too well and so on. And when he did have a good day and everything, he liked to spend it out there on the golf course. In fact, we got a city park here, and everything. And every once in a while, I'll go up there when I want some time alone. And so on, I'll go up there, and I got a spot that I sit and feed the squirrels peanuts and all that and everything. And it's in the spot that I pick is in full view of the city golf course there. And that's one of the golf courses that Joe used to play and everything. And several times I'd be sitting there feeding the squirrels and everything, and I'd see him in his little golf cart, him and a couple of other guys in their little golf carts and everything, playing golf on one of the holes.
Now, was he ever any good at it, or did he just tell you that he was?
Who knows? I don't know that much about it myself, so I wouldn't know, I wouldn't know a good golfer from a cow's tit.
Les, you got anything else, sir?
No, I'm the same way. I said earlier, I know Scarfa was a big golfer, but I'd rather watch grass grow or feed the squirrels than play golf.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you so much. Always an honor to talk to you, and really would like to thank you for coming on tonight and celebrating the life of Chief Jay Strongbow.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I wish it could have been under more pleasant circumstances rather than talking about the passing of a dear old friend, you know, and the world and the wrestling business is worse off for their loss, you know.
Well, I hope we'll do it again real soon under, you know, far better circumstances. And again, thank you so much and have a great night.
Jody,
you
always
too.
A pleasure. God bless you, my friend.
Same to you, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, and we're not doing breaks tonight, I don't believe, because we're only going to be going on for about an hour this evening and maybe joined here real soon by either Mike Mooneyham or possibly even Brutal Bob Evans to talk about all the weekend's events again. And unless...
Are we now allowed to talk about the weekend's events?
we most certainly are.
I want you to check with God and see if it's all... Before anything else, and I want to say that if you watched WrestleMania, if you watched Hell in a Cell, you went to school. Every young performer on that roster, on TNA's roster, on Ring of Honor's roster, should sit down and watch that match on how to sell, on how to tell a story, on how to pace yourself. And one of the greatest things is during the 50 minutes or whatever it was that match went, neither contestant turned to the audience to wave, ask if it was all right to hit somebody, because they, as far as they were concerned, you never knew there was an audience there if you didn't see them yourself or hear them. And that is professional wrestling. And I had said to everybody that asked me leading into this, if you were to book in this card, what would be the last match? And I said, Hell in a Cell. And, oh, no, it's got to be okay. And you saw what happened. I hate being right. I really do. But nobody could follow it. You say what you want. And I'm a Jericho fan. I'm a Punk fan. They struggled to get heat finally down to the end of their match. Rock and Cena worked their asses off, and they struggled to get heat. That should have been the last match. That was a classic. I mean, it wasn't the same as last year, and I know there are other shows run, and I know other people, other experts, quotes, my fingers in the air now, other experts thought there were other matches that were better on other cards. They're full of shit. How's that?
That's
as nice as I can say it.
Les, I went on, we did the Nightmare Show, which, you know, basically covers a lot of Japanese wrestling, and talk about that. And, you know, I always say, hey, there's, you know, different contrasts. If you really love Japanese wrestling, there may be a match that goes on that's great. And I won't argue that if you were always a longtime fan of that. But with that said, there's nothing that's going to top this. And I wasn't for having Shawn Michaels in it. After seeing how they used him in this.
He played his part tremendously well.
Holy Moses.
The one guy I forgot to mention there is I loved JR being on the microphone because he added to it, he added realism to it, and he did what announcers are supposed to do. He brought you into the match. He focused on the match. So it was, I was the same way. I thought Michaels would muddle the waters. But, here's something I've said to a couple kids, too, since Sunday. here's the very reason that most of those young guys on that roster aren't going to carry the ball. Because stop and think about the three people in that ring and how long it has taken to get their personalities embedded in the fiber of the company, in the minds of the audience or the fans, and so that they are capable to tell you that story the way they did. It don't happen overnight. They're not going to change that overnight. And I know, a lot of the young guys are upset with Rock, and now they're upset with Lesnar. Well, you know, and I said to somebody yesterday, I said, you know, you can be envious of Brock, but you can't be mad at him. I mean, any of the kids that are bellyaching about this, or old guys that are bellyaching about it, would you not like to be in the same position where Vince calls you and says, hey, let's do this, and you say, no, I don't want to do that, but here's what I will do? I mean, you who don't want to be in that position, please hold your hand up.
Hey, look, there's a guy on the line right now not holding his hand up, Brutal Bob Evans.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Bobby.
Les, I'm doing well, and I'm listening to this conversation, and I pretty much agree with everything you said. Here we go again, right? We're gonna point fingers and blame the guys who are in shape and blame the guys who have the experience, and most guys don't want to step up and run with the ball. So guess what? The ball keeps getting handed to the same old war horses that are going to make it happen. So,
yeah. Well, you know, until the young stallions learn to pull the wagon, the old guys got to do it, don't they, Bob?
Absolutely. I agree with you.
And tell me, now I don't buy pay-per-views on big screens, and I don't buy them on the internet. Because that screen's too small. But would I be correct in telling you from what I've heard, and I called this one too, that your boy Bennett had the best match he's probably had technically in a while?
Well, it was good, and I think you would have really I unfortunately didn't make it down to Florida, and that's a bone of contention that I have that I'll settle with those guys on when we see each other at TV on Saturday, but that's something to be settled down the line. But yeah, it was. I thought it was a hell of a match. I thought it was actually the second or third best match of the weekend for Ring of Honor. they did a lot of. I'll give you the. I don't know if Mike got a chance to see it, but Les, I think you would have really enjoyed it. They did probably about 4 or 5 minutes of good solid wrestling. Matt wrestling in the beginning. Lance really tested Bennett, you know, and then they picked it up. They did do some near falls, did some stuff, but everything built to a nice little head. And then at the end, Bennett pinned Lance clean, and we'll see what the future holds for Mr. Storm and Mr. Bennett. But I thought it was, if Michael Elgin didn't exist on the planet, I think that would have been Bennett's coming out party, because I really thought it was the best match he had had. But I also think he's been having some good solid matches that unfortunately a lot of times are on house shows or on. I thought the match this weekend with him and Eddie Edwards was one of the better matches they had. Another match which had a lot stronger foundation to it. But I think you would have really enjoyed the Lance match. Lance looked great, by the way, in shape.
The TV match was good too, Bob. You know, but Lance, we emailed back and forth, and he had said,
"Yeah, I emailed a little behind the curtain, but I emailed Lance just to tell him how much I respected him and how I really thought that he. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to get this in, but I really thought that he had done Ring of Honor a service by showing up in shape and showing up ready to go and really putting forward the effort that he did. I think, you know, Lance isn't always the most vocal guy, as we all know, but I think he really led by example. I know I took something from it. I hope the rest of the guys do.
Yeah, so. I know. He told me I wouldn't need a calculator to count the number of kicks that he threw.
No.
But then I heard there were plenty of them without him. I heard there were plenty of them without him.
There's always, one thing you would have liked, I didn't see the whole Davey Elgin match. I only saw some highlights from it. There were less kicks, so that's about the best I can say. Kevin Kelly's one of my best friends in the world. I'm the godfather of one of his kids, so I mean, right there, let me get that out there. So I'm extremely biased, but I thought that was the commentary call of the year. So I thought those guys, you know, we talk about those guys put in an Undertaker and Triple H performance as far as commentating all weekend. I mean, I haven't seen, aside from obviously Jim Ross, I haven't seen too many guys that could really bring it like Kevin and Nigel did. I mean, Kevin's probably the most unsung announcer in the business right now. I'm glad he's finally getting the credit he deserves because he busts his ass. And Nigel is just, I don't know, Les, ever since you sat down with him at lunch, he's been improving every single time. So you must have given him a few words of advice, sir.
Well, he's a good. Well, you know, one of the things that Nigel's always been able to do is listen, which is something that a lot of young guys don't have a talent for. But yeah, I think they're a good broadcast team, and I can see Nigel improving, and I know Kevin's helping him too. Yeah, I didn't see that match, but then I heard the suplex on the top rope into a ankle lock, and I said, oh, okay, well, it's what I expected. I'm going to be brutal. I'm going to be brutal in my own way here. A friend of mine said that he had a couple people come watch who had walked away from wrestling, and he said Taker, Hunter, brought him back to the fold.
Oh yeah,
and it was an awesome. I mean, it was more. Well, Bob, I know you'll agree. It was more about psychology, pacing, timing, and there were no spectacular bumps. That was a great thing. And they also sold what each one did. There weren't 40 kicks, and then they jumped up and exchanged chops. So,
well, and the thing, too, is it's like why – and it's and I know you're not doing this, but it's almost like you feel like you have to qualify it by saying, well, they didn't take a lot of bumps, so there wasn't – but the point is there's different kind of movies. There's action movies, and then there's movies that are a little quieter that tell a good story, too. I've never understood this. Why does there have to be one kind of a good wrestler? Why can't, you know, one kind of a good worker, so to speak? Why can't there be, you know, I mean, to me, John Cena is just as entertaining as, Rey Mysterio, but I couldn't think of two more different guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why, it's funny where they go, oh, Undertaker and Triple H did the same old thing. Well, guess what, boys? Maybe you should be doing the same old thing that they're doing because it's working. So maybe they're doing, they're beating the hell out of each other with chairs, but notice they didn't do that in their first match. They did that in the second match, and we've already established that, you know, Undertaker needed to wrestle Triple H even though he beat him. They managed to make Undertaker sympathetic after he beat Triple H. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
And then they drag each other to the back. I mean, you know, it's like these touches, and they're, you know, some of them are big, some of them are small, but, you know, and then another thing, too, and Meltzer does this all the time, and I love Dave. I'm a subscriber. I'll put that right out there. I've known Dave, you know, I first met Dave in 1990, so, you know, I've met him, and we've been friends ever since. But to say that, well, it's the atmosphere. Well, of course it's the atmosphere. If it's the, you know, the when the Red Sox came back in the American League Championship Series in 2004 and they won 4-3, that was a big deal because it was in the American League freaking Championship Series and they hadn't beaten the Yankees yet. If it was 4 games in April, it would have been cool, but it wouldn't have meant the same thing. Of course it's the atmosphere. Like, why is that? You know, if a guy has a great, you know, unfortunately, my Patriots got beat by the Giants with two clutch performances by Peyton Manning. If he did that in October, it would have been great, but it wouldn't have had the same. Now Peyton Manning's an all-time great. And, you know, I mean, of course it's the atmosphere. Why, now we're taking away for atmosphere? Oh, it was a good match, but, you know, the atmosphere. Well, yeah, the atmosphere.
I agree. Well, you know, Bob, here's the thing, too. You and I are going to look at this totally different than
I know.
All the, you know, the experts because well, they've never taken
Mike,
a bump.
Let's give Mike some credit, though. I think, and I'm going to kiss Sempervive's ass for a minute, but I think Mike actually tries to.
Oh, please.
I think out of all the guys, I think he actually struggles to try to see through the wrestler's eyes as much as he can without being one.
He
you know what I mean? Like,
I still listen
yeah.
to you guys.
Well, you try. Yeah, it's good.
I know. And I always qualify when I know he's going to disagree that I don't really care. I've not just watched a dance. I've danced a dance.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
Well,
you know.
Let me ask you if you agree with this.
Jericho and Punk get put in the worst, I don't want to say, they're not, okay, it wasn't the worst possible position, but it was a tough position to be put in, and they had a crowd that was, you know, in a haze, and they killed each other, and they kept going, and they got them. What are the odds that anybody else who were not Chris Jericho and Punk, or who were not very seasoned, and they have very few of them, would have not melted down and then done something stupid or failed in that period? Because, you know, as a fan, I kept, it was like, okay, they're going to come back, or this is great, they're going to get into it. And even I was starting to get sketchy there, and they did it, and they did a great job with it.
Part of the problem is they should have put the Cell on last, which I have continued. I will say, how many more times do I need to say that? That was the last match. It should have been the last match, but the people putting the show together weren't aware that it was the last match, regardless
right.
of whose hometown it was in, regardless of anything else. They took everything that the fans had. And yes, what, you know, people say, well, technically Punk and Jericho, okay, technically whatever, but the Cell match made that look average. And
right.
Rock got gassed a little bit, and Cena is not a guy who's going to carry you. So, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, he's just not a guy
no.
who's going out and lead a match. And they didn't get the people to the end either. I will say that you know, a lot of people said, well, they figured, you know, Lesnar should have maybe introduced Lesnar, because that might have made a bigger impact on Raw Monday night. But I think Monday night was too cluttered anyway, and had they have had him do something at Mania, I think that would have just cluttered. They had enough garbage on the show. If you watch the crowd in the Johnny Teddy thing, which is one of the things that I do, and I'm sure Bob does too, you just don't watch the match. You watch what's going on, how it affects the people at ringside. I guess there was probably no popcorn sold during the cage match, and I would imagine the concession stands did a box land office business during the Johnny Teddy feud.
I agree with that. I'll respectfully disagree with you as far as name value. I think Rock and Cena should have been last. As far as match quality, I think we all knew that Undertaker and Triple H were going to leave it all out there. I can't imagine that anybody didn't think that was probably going to be the best match of the show. But that can be debated, obviously. What did you guys think about the Daniel Bryan thing? I came in kind of late. Have we discussed that at all?
No, we haven't. I was shocked.
I'm very torn about that one, because if they're going to build to a rematch, I can't really think of a better, and this is probably going to be controversial, but I can't really think of a better finish, because I think that wasn't the day to have the 10 or 15 minute real solid good match, because I think Daniel Bryan can hang with anyone, obviously, but I don't think Sheamus is at that level. So I think they would have had a good solid, very good match, but I don't know if they would have had a classic. And I don't
know
if they're having a 15 minute match where Sheamus beats him clean in a good match. I just think it would have kind of been in that Jericho Punk category. I think the shock value of him winning in seconds, I think, was a hot finish, whether it was the right finish or, you know, because, I mean, obviously I don't think that Daniel Bryan's in the doghouse, especially not after Monday. You know, it might have been the best thing that ever happened to him. We don't know yet, but
Bob.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say
after having Bryan like sneak over or doing a kabuki finish or something so early on in the show, I don't know if that's a good idea either. You know, or DQ, or, you know, he slips over. I don't know. I think we're trying to rebuild Sheamus again, and to knock him off there, I don't know if that makes sense either. So I think the right decision was made to have Sheamus win the belt, but I think their thinking was, and I don't know, because their thinking changes on a day-to-day basis, but maybe their thinking was to have the 15, 20-minute epic match where they really pull out all the stops in April or May, you know, and so it wouldn't get lost in the shuffle. I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know how far they think ahead anymore. So,
or if
they think ahead, yeah.
Yeah. That, well, you know, I think I enjoyed Raw, not for the show necessarily,
right?
But for the way that the fans reacted to Sheamus,
yep.
The way they reacted to John. You know, and you know, here's what I sat here thinking. Now, are the people that write this stuff, are they paying attention? Because they should be. Because, you know, I mean, fans didn't dictate, but you have to pay attention. And I think there was a story to be told there, too. You know, Cena was trying to say, well, you know, I'm sorry, because, you know, not sorry, but, you know, it's okay what happened, and they didn't care. I thought, and this maybe is not relevant either, but I thought by debuting Matt Bloom and then the whole thing with Brodus Clay, I'm thinking, how many guys built like this that work like this do you need on one? I mean, it's just like, well, they do so much overkill, and I think now they're starting in that direction with this thing again, you know?
Right. Well, that's what we talk about. If there's that WrestleMania malaise every year that comes after this, and the only thing I want to say on Brian was, if they're going to be working with each other before the next pay-per-view, I think this was actually a good idea. A lot of it was a banana peel champion, a smaller guy who you know is talented, who's taking on a smaller girlfriend, all that sort of stuff, where if this leads to Sheamus being able to, you know, hang a lot better with Daniel Bryan a month from now because they've been working together even more
right.
In times we're not seeing them, great. Because they need Sheamus, obviously, because they need stars, and they need to make stars and build stars and keep them, you know, not running away from Nexus again like he did the last time around and wearing a stupid outfit after King of the Ring and all that nonsense. So,
right.
And again, how the crowd responded, now I know WWE can be, you know, very, they can push back a lot, but since everybody knows Daniel Bryan and how good he is, I don't worry about him becoming a yes catchphrase and becoming Zack Ryder or being put in that position.
No.
That could have been the best thing to happen to him because you know he can go and you know he can make everything happen and look good and hold his own. So to have people chanting yes, it was just another thing where it's like, good, you had 20,000 people actually doing it.
Well, and again, here's a guy who, and that's, you know, that's I agree with you. Here's a guy that is, to me, somebody who is berry-proof because he's always going to shine. He's always going to look just about as good or better than the guy before him. I remember when he wrestled Batista very, very early in his WWE run. Like, yeah, I think it might even still been for NXT. And he lost in like 4 or 5 minutes. But you could tell Batista had a lot of respect for him because he gave him quite a bit of the match. And I was like, you know, the kid looks like, and I mean, Batista's a giant guy, and Brian's not small, but he's not, he's probably of average height and average size. And, I mean, he hung real well with him, you know. And I was like, I can't imagine that they're going to keep – because, to me, I couldn't think of more size difference. And especially, like, with the Big Show stuff. Like, if he was going to lose steam right there, it should have been with Big Show. But if you guys recall, and I'm not sure if you do, right before they started doing the feud – Big Show was on a couple of different outlets talking about how much he respected and liked Daniel Bryan and thought he was going to be a good champion. So, and granted, you know, he might have been working just so Daniel Bryan could turn on him a little bit, but you could tell because Big Show's working hard. Like, everybody's working hard to help this kid. And, I mean, I know Bryan, and so do you, Les. I don't know if you ever met him, Mike, but he's not exactly a bombastic personality who's going to pop off and bury himself in the locker room every 10 seconds like a few other guys. He's not a controversial, polarizing character like some of the other people, so I think he's probably genuinely liked and respected by most people, and I think he's just berry-proof. I think there's too many people now are on his side, and I think Vince knows what he has. Now, he may not use it all the time. He may make mistakes with it, but I think Vince realizes what he has. I think Bryan really impressed a lot of people with his promo ability because I think that was what everybody thought he wasn't going to be able to do, is pull off the promo part. And he's done it. So, what I mean, the wrestling was always there. So.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I agree. You know,
yeah.
So a couple little things. Bob, did
sure.
That stupid bump that Ziggler took for Brodus Clay on his back on that ramp.
Oh, God.
I think he's a tremendously talented guy, and I don't even think he shows a lot of his stuff. I mean, this is a guy who's a shooter. He's a very schooled amateur. He's been where did he go, Mike? Was it Ohio State?
Kent State. He was one
Kent
of the
State.
Few Kent State.
I remember
he very good.
Yeah, because I remember he was honored by his college and. you know, he's done a lot of, and he's, you know, another guy who's worked his way up and eaten shit and done a hell of a job. And then why does, and I know he loves Mr. Perfect, but, you know, to sound cold here, and you know, I only shook Kurt Hennig's hands a couple of times, but, you know, Meltzer said it the other day. It's like, why are we emulating a guy who had pain all through his life because of the, Shorn's life because of all the crazy bumps he took. Like, why are we trying to emulate that part? Why don't we emulate the timing and the bumps and the ability to be a wise-ass heel and, you know, carry yourself like a champion? Like, and I'm not saying he's not doing those things. I'm just saying, like, we don't have to take crazy bumps on the ramp. And I've taken a bump on the ramp, and it hurts.
and he's not Kurt. He's not even close. But, you know, how many kids want to be Sabu and be crippled before they're 40?
Exactly. I mean, so, you know.
They find that to be
40 when he was 25. So.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I've become of an apologist for Ziggler and Swagger just because I like them and I see the potential what they could be because of their backgrounds and the fact, you know, but I was always worried that they turned into Varsity Club 2.0, and I blame WWE for this a little bit too, because
of course
you have something there, but you're the one letting Ziggler be a more, I mean, Ziggler is now going to be, he'll be human Super Bowl, and Swagger will be the big dumb oaf who trips over himself and loses the fall, and it's like, I'm sitting there looking at Swagger take another fall of the Cobra and thinking, this is why, right after WrestleMania, now I hate wrestling again for a couple of minutes. And I blame them for that because Ziggler is going to be a cripple.
You know, they come off of the WrestleMania and do some things right, or allow people who know how to work do some things right.
Right.
And then they come right back, the kid that worked, that put Matt over, put Bloom over.
Right,
I thought, Jesus,
Riley.
Riley's been off TV. He's a good-looking kid, except he got into the kick pad brigade. He used to wear shoes, and I loved him better then.
Yep, absolutely.
He's got the same tailor now that everybody else, that all the other flippy floppers have. You know, here's a kid that you had him off TV. You could have brought him back and started to ease him into the mix, and you just brought him back and just put him in the can again. I mean, it's, you know, and I think in excess, they debuted Del Rio coming back. They debuted Matt Bloom. They brought Lesnar out. I think they could have doled all that out over several weeks. It wasn't necessary because coming off of Mania, you know, you got that buzz anyway, and I think Lesnar would have been fine. They could have saved the rest for later because I think the Lesnar thing was not just the icing, but the cake altogether.
You know what, Les? I was thinking the same thing for this reason, too. I believe in the power of John Cena and that he needs to get tougher. You need to tweak that character. But, you know, when you sell that much merchandise and you have people that actually like you and respond to you to a certain degree, you know, he can't turn heel, even though that's what he probably should do. But I just don't. There's ways to do it without doing that. Brock Lesnar going to lay him out. They should have debuted Tensai, who got completely overshadowed on that show, and is going to have a style that people have to get used to, even though I know there was a smarter crowd, let's say, in, you know, obviously on Monday night that were there. He didn't stand out in the way he should have stood out, and him destroying John Cena, because he'd be a guy that Cena, people would cheer Cena in that feud because they don't know Bloom, and I don't think they hate Cena that much, where if Cena plays, you know, if Cena actually punches him in the face and actually tries to get some manhood back after WrestleMania, people would buy it. Instead, he just gets buried by Brock Lesnar, and it's like, I don't know the direction that they go, but they never give me much faith post-WrestleMania.
Well, you know, I'll take my hat off to John for looking at the lights for Rock, you know, because everybody was trying to figure out what's the finish here. You know, Cena's got to win. Rock's not going to be there, but that Vince always likes to send everybody home happy, which is not my way of thinking anyway. I like him sending them home with a reason to come back. I just finished watching Justified, and there's the season finales next Tuesday night, and I can't wait till next Tuesday night. You know, that's what I shoot for, you know, would shoot for, and they don't, of course. But, you know, here's the thing with Cena. They're trying too hard to. I'm not sure at this point, after Monday night, I'm not sure what they're trying too hard to do. They shift gears with him, and nobody seems to, you know, not buying it either way. I'd give him a rest is what I'd do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd send him to, you know, to Cancun for a vacation with his wife or something for a while. I mean, I'm sure the merchandise won't dry up.
I think
I agree.
Now's the time. Orton gets booted off that Marine 3 movie. You know what? Put Cena back in it and let see. I mean, because I know they lose their minds. Remember when he lost to Nexus and they couldn't even keep him off TV for 5 seconds, so they probably won't do it. But damn, Les, you're right, in that will help more than anything is just people not seeing him.
Well, that's one of the things that's kept Undertaker so strong. Is Mark knows when to go away, or else he's smart enough to heal his injuries without, you know, making them worse, whichever the case may be. But the point is, he's not there every night. So he's special when he is there. And, you know, well, Jericho is smart enough to walk away and come back and makes himself important by the fact he hasn't been there in a while. You know, and you can only do, I mean, again, you know, the whole, Bob, I don't know if you heard us earlier, but I said, you know, some of those guys in the roster were mad because Rock was getting the spot. Now they're going to be, I said, you can't be mad at Brock Lesnar. You can be envious of his position, but how many guys wouldn't want to be in a position where they can say no to Vince?
Well, and if I'm those guys, and see, they're not, here we go again. It's, you know, I guess it's just because I'm older or just haven't had the run yet, and you know, and I said yet because I'm hopeful, but but you know, it's like I want if I'm not going to be the money drawn guy, I want a money drawn guy on top. It's why all the guys wanted to work the house shows with Hogan, because
sure.
The you know, a rising tide floats all boats or whatever it is. You know, it's like why, you know, well, hey, if I can't be Brock Lesnar, then I'm sure as hell going to join him, because if he can get me another 100, you know, 50,000 pay-per-view buys, that's probably an extra 500 or 1,000 a night in my check for a while. And if you work some big house shows and I'm on those, and, you know, it's like you got to look at it from that point of view, guys. You know, Rock probably figured into another 100, 200,000 buys. You know, we know he did last year, so I
sure.
assume he did again this year. And if they hadn't kind of screwed up everything the past, you know, couple weeks where, you know, Cena and Rock just couldn't stop hanging out together and doing a bunch of dumb stuff before WrestleMania, then we probably could have had an even bigger thing. Again, you know, why are we afraid to leave John Cena off TV? John Cena is a huge star. You don't have to have him disappear from life. You can just have him, like you said, you know, hey, take 2 weeks off, take the wife out, hit the beach. You know, I know you're not going to get fat and lazy, John. You're too disciplined a person. And just send him out and do a couple of light PR things, or maybe do something in Hawaii or something, and just make it a working vacation. Because, you know, John Cena is a very hard-working guy, and he probably would go crazy if he couldn't do anything. But just, you know, the guy needs a break, and he needs a break from our eyes too. And I love John Cena. You know, I'm friendly with John. I'm not friends with him. I don't know him that well, but we're friendly acquaintances. And he's a tremendous guy, and he's a leader in that locker room. But,
yeah.
You know, there's also a reason that, you know, there's a reason why he's on top, but there's also a reason that we can, you know, he's not going to get, you know, make nothing, you know, he's not going to lose his spot if he goes and takes a couple weeks off.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
But he just won't ask for it, you know, he's that
right.
type of a person, you know. And
whether by accident or on purpose, I think the good thing that happened Sunday and Monday is he looked at the lights on Sunday night.
Sure.
And Lesnar laid him out Monday night, so they're actually seeing his vulnerability, which is something that was missing and which all good baby faces have.
I agree, but we also should have, like you said, we just stacked up too much. We put Matt on TV, and I'm
yeah.
thrilled for Matt because, I mean, Matt, you know, he looked good. I mean, you know, he's older, but I think his body physically looks a lot better. I thought his work was good. I probably wouldn't have put him out there for 4.5-5 minutes because I think the style, I think he should have just run over. I think they should have used the local guy for that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
or one of the
guy.
Developmental guys, you know, just and why Alex Riley's like 6'3". Why are we using such a tall, let's make Matt look as big. I mean, Matt's a tall, crazy looking guy. I mean, he's 6'6", 6'7", but you know, he looked a little bit taller than Alex Riley, you know, and Alex Riley isn't exactly a world beater, but let's have him run over a couple of kids or put him in a handicap match like they used to do
right.
with, like, Umaga and, you know, even going back to Andre the Giant, just have him run over these people and just, like let's build them up nice and well, nice and slow is 3 weeks now, but you know.
Yeah. You know something that I saw, I don't know if either one of you guys saw it or not, the confrontation between Ambrose and Foley in the hotel lobby.
No,
oh,
I've
yeah.
heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, I'm going to tell you why I loved it so much. It was underplayed so you believed it. It wasn't overacted or over, you know, it, Dean played it right, Mick played it right, and it was just well done. I mean, it you could buy into it, you know. Somebody said, "Well, you know, you couldn't hardly hear them." Well, they weren't yelling because they were talking to one another. They weren't cutting a promo. It was
right.
two people having a, you know, a debate or a confrontation. And well, when you see it, Bob, you I think you'll like it too. It's just it's real. I mean, that's the best way to say it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's he's Regal's boy, and I'm not saying that disrespectfully. I'm saying that if William Regal sees enough in him to take him under his wing, then he must be doing something right. You know, because he's usually not wrong about these kind of people. So,
and
yeah.
You know who started him up? Les Thatcher, and you know, because last year around this time, we had a chance to talk to John Moxley, and unfortunately, Les couldn't be on with us. But for everybody, go back in the archives, and you got to listen to that show.
He said he had never heard of you, Les. He said he didn't he'd never heard of you. He said he was trained by Dan. What's his name? Zandig. And all those other guys from that DJ took over, you know, before all them, all those guys, all your friends at Combat Zone back in the day.
he actually started with one of the guys that I trained, but I think I got a chance to work with him after he started, and he came in to work with me. I went over there, my old company, on Wednesday nights for a long time. And he was the one consistent guy that was there every Wednesday night to work with me. And then when they shut down, he would call me and bring me tapes, and we'd look at the tapes. We'd go have coffee somewhere and sit and talk about them. And you know, we'd stay on the phone and this and that and the other thing. So he's willing to learn, and he has got he's refined his whole thing a lot. I was curious when I heard about him and Foley having his thing, and I think, I want to see this. And, again, it was, you know, you could buy in. You could say, oh, well, now maybe this was real. You know, you can suspend your disbelief. Like two guys, you know, we got to be sure to do this for the camera. It wasn't done for the camera. So, in fact, at one point, Dean leans in and sort of whispers in Mick's ear, you know, but they weren't holding microphones and they weren't, you know, talking to the camera, which I'll tell you somebody else I'm interested in. You know, Scott Steiner says that he's going to talk openly about Hogan and Bischoff trying to bury TNA, and he's going to speak for those who can't. And I said, okay, hats off to you, brother. I go for
Mike Bennett got a chance to spend some time with Scott Steiner at an indie show a couple months ago, and said he was actually a real cool guy. I've only met Scott a couple of times at TV, and he was, you know, just a handshake and moving on. You know how TV is; it's so busy. But you know, just a very a guy. I was surprised about how anxious he was to give back, but I guess that's kind of. Because, I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, Scott was kind of a tough character back in the day. I don't know if he wasn't everybody's taste, you know. I know he got along with some guys and he didn't get along with others, you know. But,
right, yeah.
But I know Mike was very complimentary of him and said he you know, helped him as much as he could and gave him advice on his match, and you know, which I was glad to hear because I think, you know, like you said, Les, there's not too many people that are trying to give back, and it's great that Scotty, you know, offered that advice when asked.
Yeah,
you know? And
absolutely.
You know what it is too, Les? I don't think enough guys ask. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but my brain isn't. You know, I got a big brain. I don't mind people picking at it at a show. I mean, only a few people ask though, and it's usually the better guys. Figure that one out.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I've said that before at some of my seminars. I said, well, this has been a number of years ago. I was leaving an ROH show up in Dayton and was saying goodnight with Dragon on my way out, and he said and the key was, he didn't say how good was my match, he said, what did we do wrong? That was the way he approached it. You watched our match. I said, yeah. I said, what did we do wrong? It wasn't like, how good was I, or tell me how good I was.
Right.
You know, he won. And in that respect, you know, as long as guys are willing to listen and learn, you're right, Bob. It's so many, a lot don't ask, and some who do, you tend to think they're, the way they ask, it's like, okay, now tell me how good I was, or why. Well, you know, I had an indie guy, and I honestly can't remember, send me a link to his, and he said, I'm such an age, and I'm, you know, and I'm wondering why I didn't get looked at. And so I watched his match, and it was, you know, the guy looked all right, but it was just a lot of, you know, when I say indie stuff, it was a lot of indie stuff, right? I mean,
right,
it wasn't
exactly.
It wasn't something Steamboat and Tommy Pritchard were going to sink their teeth into and say, well, can't wait to get our hands on this guy. And,
right.
And I told him, and I said, look, I said, if you want to contact me, I said, I'll be more than happy. You click on that link on your end of the phone, I'll click on it here, and then we can stop this thing, and I can explain in detail, because it's a lot of little things, you know, not necessarily any big things. I never heard from him.
Well, I mean, that would take, you know, you don't always tell me what I want to hear when I send you my stuff. So, and that's fine though, because, you know, when you're a quote unquote veteran guy in this area, there are a few guys that'll see something, but it's not as easy to get that critique. So that's why I do send you my stuff. You know, I mean, it's you know, Les has bailed me out a few times mentally too. So, but it's you
really,
know, I mean, you have
he's crushed me several times the same way.
Well, I mean, you know, again, there's a couple of those times where I've whined to him, and he's been like, yeah, and he'd heard me out, and then, you know, said, well, enough of that, get back to work, and. You know, the whining's done. You know, what's done is done. Let's get back to work. Let's do it. You know, and that's sometimes you just need somebody to hear you and bounce off the walls for 15 minutes and then go, okay, so what are we going to do about it now? And that's, I've been sending and it's something too, because I'm trying to step up my game too. So the past 3 or 4 months, I've been trying to send matches to different, you know, Terry Taylor and Les and a few other people that have mentored me throughout the years, and just trying to reconnect with these people and say, you know, it's time for me to play student again, because I've been teaching so much that I can't see the forest for the trees. You know, I'm kind of in my own little teacher fishbowl, so help me brush up my stuff. And Les basically just said, hey, it's, you're doing fine, but you just have some bad habits, and, you know, you're picking them up from, you know, the young guys around you. So I said, yeah, you're right. So I just kind of it's good that somebody can just kind of check on you and say, hey, this is, you know, you have to kind of be a little bit more aware of it, you know, just kind of raise your sensitivity to it. So,
speaking
always
of links,
grateful,
you sent me a link today. You sent me a link today, Bob, and I clicked on it, and Internet Explorer wouldn't let me get on that site.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can send it again. I'm not sure.
Were you trying to give me a virus? Is that what it was?
I was trying to send you stuff to help enhance you more in more ways than one. So that's
all right.
I was trying.
I love to be enhanced. At this age, I need all the enhancement I can get.
I know. I just need enhancement to get me back to zero again. I'm in negative numbers right now.
Hey, just don't do anything Alistair Overeem like to bring up any levels.
Stop bringing up that phony UFC stuff.
Well, guys, unfortunately, the Rich has got some things to do work-wise, and I do as well. And it's only an hour this week.
I do have one thing to say, though, because, Les, we're going to hear Mike Sempervive's excuse of the month today of why he can't come see me and shake my hand in person at the Baltimore Ring of Honor TV taping Saturday. Go ahead, Mike. What's the excuse?
Go ahead, Mike. I want to hear this.
Yeah, what is it this month? I have to work, or I have to wash my hair. What is it, Mike?
I'm actually skipping out of work, and you know what? Being in the business that I'm in, the day before Easter, I should be
actually there and
doing that, but I'm actually grabbing the boy and throwing him in the family truckster, and we are coming up to see you in Ring of Honor.
What?
Yes. Can you believe this?
I heard it, so it better happen. Yes, okay. But if it doesn't, Bob, let me know, and I'll.
Oh, believe me, you won't have. I'll let you know, and I'll let everybody else know too.
I will chastise him next week.
Hey, you know what this is all about, really? Though this is all about Avery, because everyone's seen my son Avery on my Facebook and everything. It's really about getting him up there to slime up to Maria to see maybe if I could cause some sort of divide with Mike Bennett there, and I could get close using Avery's cuteness to get me there.
You're hoping that she'll hug Avery, and a little of her perfume will get on him, and then you'll hug Avery, and then, right? Is that the deal?
I'll tell you what, she does smell pretty good.
I was mad at you when I watched ROH last week, and you got between the camera and her, and I said, Jesus, Bob, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
I know, and then they got, one more little thing. Sorry, Rich, but I thought this is actually something that goes back, and I hope this doesn't start a whole thing, but it kind of makes me laugh because I'll get blamed for, like, scratching up Eddie Edwards' back, and just that wasn't my idea. I had without pulling away the magician's curtain too much, I had something in mind that was actually much just as devastating looking but a little safer, and Eddie Edwards, being the animal that he is, decided to do something a little more, came up with a more dangerous idea. So then there was a 10-minute debate on whether I could save Eddie Edwards from himself, and I couldn't, so.
Hey, guys. Tomorrow night on the network, I want to get this into because we talked about Jay Strongbow tonight, but all the guys over there, Bobby Sid and Jerry with Mike Norris, they're going to be talking obviously more about Strongbow, but also about other wrestlers that benefited in the way that obviously Scarpa / Strongbow did with having multiple personas back in the day, and they're going to be talking about that. And obviously for all the news out there too, ringsiderap.com and georgiawrestlinghistory.com, and I'm not going to hype anything in mind because – that, you know what, Brian just annoys me sometimes. So,
at Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter.
All right. Yeah. Well. Okay. Well, then you fit right in with the youngsters, kid.
I'm on
my email and my phone. I don't twit or Twitter.
And once again, I'll be a living referral for Les. I do this every time, but I feel like I should because, please. You know, guys, if you can get him into a seminar, if you can get, especially if you haven't had him in before, because he's a fresh pair of eyes, an experienced eyes. 51, right? Is it 52?
Yeah,
this July 4th?
It'll be 52 July the 4th.
I just hit 20. I'm a baby, so. but I just want to tell everybody out there, guys, please, you know, make the investment. Don't worry about, you know, pull your money, do what you have to do, bring him in. And Les will really change your thinking, just been a tremendous source of resources for me and still does. And I'm so glad, you know, Les has been a blessing in my life personally and professionally. And you guys can have that too, but you have to make the effort and contact the man and take advantage of his knowledge. Because like I said, there's not too many of us out here, that are trying that hard to
Do
it. So let's,
you know,
let's
I'm looking
it up.
Forward to seeing how Taylor's progressed when I see her in Vegas in a couple weeks.
The OVW Women's Champion. Yes.
Yeah,
that's
I know. She's going to – she sent me her itinerary. She's going out and get her tryout with GLOW, so I'm looking forward to that. See?
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I'm very proud of Taylor. She's she is a shining light in a sometimes dark business, so we appreciate we appreciate all those people that really do appreciate all the people that help them. So, but Mike Rich has to go. I'm sure he's bouncing off the walls right now.
Yeah, but you know one thing you forgot about that. If you want to get up with Les, you got to contact him at les@epwt.com.
Thank you, Michael.
I
appreciate
it. Right,
join
well,
us again next week, Bobby, when
today.
We may have 2 hours instead of one.
Yeah, Les, hopefully I will see you in the next Ohio run. If not, I will talk to you soon, sir. And
all right,
Mike,
brother.
Hopefully I will see you Saturday.
And I'll take out a loan, too, to try to feed you, too, if you're going to make
awesome.
Me buy lunch.
Absolutely. All right, boys. Have a great night.
Have a good
you
one,
guys,
Bobby.
Too.
Take care.
And yep. For everybody listening out there, thank you very, very much. And again, we're going to possibly have Jim Ross on this week. He was a little busy this weekend, didn't get a chance, but I know we got some good stuff coming up. And Les, thank you very much, sir. And I look forward to talking to you next week.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.